have spent the last several weeks talking about the Ten Commandments. And since we finished the Ten Commandments last week, it might look like that's a good time to move on, but it's not. We've looked in Exodus 20. We've noticed that the Ten Commandments are repeated in Deuteronomy 5. We've looked back and forth into Matthew 5 to see times that Jesus talked about things from the Old Testament, saying, "You've heard that it's been said, but I say to you," and he puts extra meaning and extra depth into how to think about those things. And as we come to a close, we need to look at one more thing. And I'm going to try to follow the path I took in the first hour. I started the first hour without being sure exactly the order and how I was going to do this, but I think I'm going to follow that order again. I want to begin by making sure that you know where we're going, rather than letting that sort of come out. And where we're going is this. There was a time in the Gospels where Jesus said which of the commandments was the greatest, or which was the first. And I want us to make sure we know what that is. And I want us to talk about what it means. Those appear in Matthew and in Mark and in Luke. We're going to look at all three of those. Each one of those is going to raise a question, which we will then begin, as we have more time, to address. And we won't finish that job today. We'll pick this up again next week. Now, let me make sure that you know before we start what the answer is. What is the greatest or first commandment? What's the answer to that question? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Sometimes it says three of those, sometimes it says all four. And Jesus said, but there's a second one. What's that? Love your neighbor as yourself. Are you finished? The answer is no, you're not. There's a third one. What's the third one? Love each other. And that's all Travis talked about this morning. Why didn't Jesus give all three of those? He gave the first two to the people. He gave the third to the people that were supposed to love each other. And it wasn't until he finally had that group to the point where they could understand what he was going to say. And he left it for the last minute. It's one of the last things he said. So let's see if we can get all three of those. What's the first one? Love God. Second one? Love your neighbor. Third one? Love each other. That's where we're going. Okay? Now, sometimes it's hard to love you guys. Sometimes that's a challenge. We've got an epidemic going on in our classes right now. And I don't know if you know this. When did you find out that Wanda was in trouble?
Today.
This morning. Here. Why? Because when she got sick, word went out from the family. No calls. No visits.
No contact.
There's at least two more that you don't know about yet. And I wish I could tell you. But I can't. Because the family has said, no visits, no calls. Do not hear me criticizing that. Let me say it again. Don't hear me criticizing that. Hear me simply commenting. It's happening. It happened with Paige Foster and Nancy. No calls, no visits. Why did that happen? Well, remember Travis said in the thing, sometimes you got to have some hard conversations to have a community that really knows how to interact with each other and have fellowship properly. Sometimes not everybody knows how to go make a hospital visit. And when you have somebody who doesn't know how to go make a hospital visit, sometimes what the family says is, let's not have any if we're going to have any more like that. And sometimes, after you've had a few like that, you start to anticipate, let's just start off not having any. I understand that. And I hope and pray that you do too. The first hour was harder. Paige was in the room. The first hour was harder. Jean was around. What's going on? Figuring out how to love each other turns out to be a lot bigger challenge than you think. And so what I want to do today is I want to drive through this paying more attention to that than anything else. And when I finish, I'm hoping you can take everything Travis said, put it alongside of this, and have something more than you would if it was just me.
Can I add something before we begin?
The fact that your name was up there with what you did was actually very helpful in the first hour. So, yeah, you can say whatever
we
you like.
We have been known as a church, and I'm saying this from being in the hospital with people from this church. We have been known to be overwhelming in our love.
That's a better way of saying what I'm trying to say.
I say it, so I guess my challenge is
smothering.
How do we love and not be overwhelmed? Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that,
and we want to love, and we want to
let me go ahead and jump to the end and tell you what I think the solution is. I don't know how to make this work. You can help. We need a point person. And when we're thinking about visiting, you check with the point person and find out, is it appropriate? Would it be helpful?
Yeah.
We do. But we don't always put it up here. For example, here's Jared Kizzy. He's up in Rico County, as we said, which room he was in. All right. We need a name up here. And I need my deacons to help me with this. And I need my other caregivers to help me with this. Put a name of a contact. You want to go do something for that family? You want to go visit that family? You want to go? And please, do not misunderstand this either. The instincts that you guys have to reach out to people who are in pain and grief, I don't want to discourage that in any way, shape, or form. But there are times when praying for somebody at a distance may be better than all of us going and visiting. And I don't know how to do this. I've got to work with Leonard as well. But I think we need some kind of a contact somebody before you bring food. Check with somebody and make sure that that's going to be working okay. Before you go and visit, check with somebody. That's cumbersome. That's tough. It cuts down on spontaneity. But I think somewhere there. I got a lot more to say, but I thought I'd start by telling you, you know, here's the abstract, and we'll get the full paper in a minute or two, okay? First and then second.
I mean, I would suggest informing as far as the main contact. He pretty much heads up all the visitations.
If you can't reach anybody else, but, yes.
And then Walt Coleman sort of heads up the on-call.
Yeah, we got deacons in our group. I want to honor and use the talents and skills of the folks in our group. And we have some who aren't deacons that are sort of serving in that kind of a role. Just and it may be you call a deacon and the deacon says, let's talk to Norman.
Yeah. Well, you see, because you know, Norman gives us actual classes, okay, on...
Yeah. And I want to be real careful. The comments I'm making this morning, there are a couple of folks that need, maybe I'll say it this way, to take the classes again, but my impression is that most of the people have had those classes. It's taken. I've watched you and some of the others and how you function. That part's pretty good, but I think somehow we got to find a way to love each other in a way that works. And right now, it's edging up on folks saying, let's just don't have any, because when it comes, it's too much. And I don't want to go any further with that because I've got a lot of things to say to sort of come in and fill in behind it. Bobby, and then up here.
I'm not sure that the deacons might need any help with that. Is that, you know, somebody that's here in the class is more familiar with that person?
That's what I'm thinking. If there's a person, and then connect the person with the deacon where the two of them both know, and then make sure both have said something to Norman so Norman's in the loop. But I'm saying it may not be that we do that through the prayer list. We might do that quietly behind the scenes outside the prayer list. And then it comes to the prayer list when we've got some things that we can give guidance on how to help. I don't know how this is all going to look, but I am noticing there's a difference this year than I've seen. And that difference has been amplified in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. We're probably going to say the exact same thing. We desperately need that a person at Rogier's Hall for that. We have no deacons. We have one part-time pastor that supposedly does it all and worn-out volunteers. And we have got to have a rejuvenation. And that place of a deacon there is so needed. It is so needed because we don't have it. We don't have anybody that has stepped up to the plate. And we have contacted Walt Perlman about this. We have contacted Norman Burns about this. So I'm going to plead with y'all who hear me, go to the pastors. Tell them this is necessary.
Or listen to your heart and see if God's calling you. See if God's called. No, I'm not. You're leaving. You're leaving. I'm saying somebody to come in behind you because you're leaving a hole over there that's huge, and that's part of what I'm looking at. Yeah.
The thing that concerned me with what you said is they said no calls, no visits. What's left out is that if they said, "But please pray." I mean, that's what we as a group can do without being intrusive.
What has happened is when we say no calls, no visits, people go anyway.
They do.
Really?
And they go in numbers and they stay. And that's because that's happened, we've been told you can't even put this on the prayer list for people to pray. That's why I'm saying it's a problem. That's why I'm saying it's a problem. I've got two cases that if people in this church knew, there'd be 100 people moving this afternoon.
And I can't tell them. I've told families, Bonnie, or we'll respect you. And sometimes they say, oh.
No. And I'm
sometimes I have to be, I say, well, then I'll be the bad guy. I don't want to be the bad guy.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? Yeah. And I'll ask, I appreciate your love, but we can't have you visit. So if I have to say that to y'all, please respect that.
You know what, Bill? That's not love. If people ask you not to come and you come anyway, that's not love. That's selfish.
I want to be real careful how much fervor I let get into this conversation.
Okay.
Because there are people whose hearts are full of there are people whose hearts are full of concern, and they feel the need to act on those. And the training that Chuck was just talking about, which let me say again, for 98% of the deacons, it's taking. I am impressed with how the deacons are doing this thing. I'm impressed by how Chuck and Ralph and some of the others that we have are responding with sensitivity and that. But it's an issue, and I want, if I don't say it, you won't know. And I want to try to say it now in the larger context. We got time for one or two more, and then we're not going to have time to finish up everything. But
that's the start of correction. I mean, loving correction is what you're doing.
Travis said there are times you have to have hard conversations because if you don't, you can't get the fellowship right.
And I would encourage that the leaders of other Sunday school classes take on the hard role that you're assuming here, and at least in a loving way.
Thank you for recognizing.
Okay. Expressing a different approach to how we can do this and still fulfill the things that we want to fulfill. But it has to happen in more than just one class. So my encouragement would be that some kind of meeting is called to say, guys, this is really important. We say we want to do better in the way we express love toward each other so the world will know. This is a big one. So let's see if we can't get it right. And it needs to be something that each class
church-wide.
Addresses church-wide. It, you know, from alone. And not everybody will be there, but you'll cover 60-some percent at least one Sunday.
Chuck, you're going to partner with me a little bit about taking this to Norman. Again, I know where your heart is. I know where your function is. And please don't hear anything I'm saying criticizing that. That's the problem I have. That there's a few that have carried this to a point where we're having people who hold their grief inside and don't let anybody know they're dealing with it. Mm-hmm. And that's got to be addressed. But it's got to be addressed in a way that functions and works. Diane?
This is probably stupid, but I was just thinking there needs to be like a sign-up sheet like we do for meals where maybe only two people can go a day. And it's on there that says 10 minutes only. or whatever it is, and then that they have to sign up for that before they can go.
But sort of like Sunday school teachers with little kids, it's nice if it's the same one over and over sometimes rather than each one that comes in. You've got to start all over. That's there's a balance even there from where I sit. I don't want to offer all the prescriptions because I don't think I know them, and I don't want to stick here because this is negative, and I want to go to where you can see the context for this.
Having had two patients in my family last year,
I didn't want to look this way because I know you've walked through some of this.
There's a lot of this. And sometimes they don't mean to, but they're interfering with the healing of the person. And they do, and sometimes it's even directed by the doctors. But for Dan, for instance, he was in ICU, that kind of thing. We didn't have that problem with Dan at all, but I think Amy did. But people need to recognize that issue, that you might be interfering with the healing, and the whole purpose for their being there is to be healed.
The power of prayer out of this
Absolutely.
Church is wonderful.
Absolutely.
Sometimes the other things we put with this may not be working as well as we think they are.
Mm-hmm.
Can I go ahead?
Yeah, maybe. Go ahead.
Matthew 21. I want to try to show you the context in which these comments came out. What are the comments? What's the greatest commandment? It isn't one, it's
three.
What are they?
Love God, love neighbor,
love each other.
Love your neighbor as yourself.
Oh, there's lots of filling in that has to be gone. I've just tried to remind you of the big three. Chapter 21. If you start at verse 33, Jesus tells a parable. It has an eerie similarity to something Isaiah wrote in Isaiah 5. There was a man, a landowner, who planted a vineyard. He took care of it, he built it up, and then he left town and left it with tenants. He sent to get his produce, and his servants were beaten and sent away over and over. He finally said, I'll send my son, surely they won't mistreat him. And verse 38, when the tenants saw the son, they said, oh, here's the heir, let's kill him and we can take over everything that was his. And Jesus asked, what are they going to do? What do you think the landowner's going to do when he comes back? Now here's what I want you to see. Verse 45. When they heard his parables, the chief priests and scribes had a reaction. What was their reaction? They realized he was talking about them. Mine goes on to say in verse 46, but though they would have liked to arrest him, they were afraid of the crowds who looked on him as a prophet. Okay, now in Matthew you have to wait a little bit before you see what they did. You have to go to verse 15. What did they do? They began to, my translation, work out among themselves how to trap him in what he said. Verse 15 and 16 and 17, they sent some people to him to ask him a question, hoping to trap him in what he said. That didn't work. Verse 23, the Sadducees, another group of leaders, sent some people to put a question to him. That didn't work. Verse 34, when the Pharisees heard the Sadducees had been silenced, they got together and, to put him to the test, asked him a further question. Master, which is the greatest commandment of the law? That was not a question designed to raise important information from Jesus. What was the purpose of the question?
To trap
him to where he could be arrested and put to death. We don't realize that. What is the greatest commandment of the law? Jesus said to him, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind. That is the greatest and first commandment. The second resembles it. You must love your neighbor as yourself. And then Jesus says one more absolutely astounding thing. What does he say?
All
the law, and some translations add, and all the prophets hang on these two commandments. What does it mean that all the law and prophets hang on these two? What does that mean? You don't get the answer.
No.
You do not get the answer. We're flagging that as a question we're going to have to deal with. And we're going to move on to Mark. Chapter 12. We need to know, but we're not going to indulge ourselves yet. We're going to go to Mark. Mark chapter 12, verse 1. How does verse 1 of Mark start? Chapter 12. Okay, you're not there yet.
She begins to take
And what was the first parable he told them? It's the same parable. And when he comes to the end of that, verse 12, what does it say? They, presumably the leaders, scribes and Pharisees and Sadducees, would have liked to arrest him because they realized the parable was aimed at them, but they were afraid of the crowd, so they left him alone and went away. But the next day they sent some people back. This is verse 13, and they asked a question. And when that didn't work, verse 18, the Sadducees came in and asked a question. And when that didn't work, verse 28 comes along. And verse 28 turns out to be different from Matthew, and we're not sure what the reason is for the difference. This isn't the group coming back the third time. Mark is showing you a slightly different picture. Maybe, I don't know how to reconcile these two, but he speaks as if there's a scribe who listened to them debating and appreciated that Jesus had given a good answer and put an additional question to him. For the first time, a question is being posed, trying to gain from Jesus more insight and more wisdom about spiritual matters. This is the first legitimate question that's being offered. Now, maybe we should think of the third question in Matthew the same way. It's the same question. Which is the first of all the commandments? And Jesus replies as he did before. Verse 32, this is remarkable. The scribe who asked the question comments on the quality of Jesus' answer. Isn't that cool? Well spoken, Master, mine says. Well said, I think another translation says. Going on, he says, what you have said is true. He is one, and there is no other. And to love him with all your heart, understanding, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself, this is far more important than any burnt offering or sacrifice. Jesus now comments on him. What does he say?
You are not far from the kingdom of God.
And what is the little parenthetical comment about what's in Jesus' mind as he says it? Does yours have that little, maybe it's not in parentheses. Jesus, recognizing how wisely he had spoken, said, you're not far from the kingdom of heaven. And after that, no one dared to question him anymore. What was it this guy said that Jesus praised?
That this was more important than offerings and sacrifices, but had that love in their hearts.
What's more important?
It's the love of God. And
he just quoted these two commandments in his own way, right? Obeying, following, those two is more important. More important than what?
Burnt offerings and sacrifices.
Mine says burnt offerings or sacrifices. Never mind trying to tease out what the difference is between those two words, because you might have thought that the two terms were talking about the same thing. What's that talking about? That it's more important than burnt offerings and sacrifices. Guess what? You don't get to answer that one either yet. We're going to flag that that's something important to think about that emerges from this place. And we're going to move to Luke. Bravo. Excellent. You're doing pretty good at this, aren't you? Find Luke 20. Now, I'd like you to take a look at chapter 20, verse 9. What do you see? Parable of the Vineyard. Now, each one will give you a slightly different take on this. If you read all three of them, you will come up with a sort of a triangulation on this rather than just a monovision. You'll have a richer sense. Verse 19, all the scribes and the chief priests would have liked to have laid hands on him at that very moment because they realized the parable was aimed at them, but they were afraid of the people. Verse 20, so they awaited their opportunity, a little bit of detail here, and sent agents to pose as upright men. Boy, that's a powerful statement, isn't it? They sent agents to pose as upright men and to catch him out in something he might say. My goodness, we don't send agents out anymore posing as upright men, trying to catch people in what they say, do we? That would be something that would be beneath the dignity of civil discourse, right? It is a condemnation of the United States that that's still true. It is a condemnation of Virginia. It is a condemnation of Richmond and the counties that are around it. We have people who are playing gotcha left and right, and it's just as wrong now as it was then. Civil discourse has no place for that. And civil people should condemn it. But there they go. They ask a question. Verse 26, they were unable to catch him out in anything he had to say in public. They were amazed at his answer and were silenced. Verse 27, here come the Sadducees. They ask their question. Okay? Some scribes spoke up. Verse 39, they said, "Well put, master," and they didn't dare to ask him any more questions. Wait a minute. That's only two. How many questions do we need? This wasn't hard.
Three.
Where's the third one? It's not in verse 41. It's not in verse 45. It's not in chapter 21. That third question is buried back in Luke 10. You have to go all the way back to Luke 10 to find that other one. Luke has somehow disconnected that third question for reasons that we don't understand. You'll find it in chapter 10, verse 25. Did you find it in chapter 10, verse 25? No, you haven't gotten to chapter 10, verse 25. Everybody there? A lawyer stood up and to test him. Okay, this is still fitting with the Matthew account. Somebody is still asking questions to try to catch him out. Ask him a question. Now, what's his question this time? Because this is interestingly different. What's his question? What must I do to inherit eternal life? And Jesus' response is brilliant. You're the lawyer. What did the word lawyer mean in those days? It isn't quite the same as it is today. Somebody who's an expert on the law. What's the law? It's all the commandments in the first five books of the Bible and elsewhere, right? So you're a lawyer. You study law. What is your reading of the law? What do you do to inherit eternal life? And the man replied, "You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus replies, "You answered correctly." You answered rightly, I think is the strict way to say it. Do this, and life, eternal life, is yours. Now, what's the obvious question that must have been on the heart of that man? Oh, I'm sorry. Was that too challenging a question? He's just said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, strength, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus said, good, do that, and you'll live. Do that. That was two things, right? And the guy's question is, you've looked ahead, right? Who's my neighbor? He ignores the first half of that. He focuses on the second half. Well, who do I... You guys are a little bit more hip than the people in the first hour, right? Right. You're in here. You can join this group. You've seen the movie Office Space? Okay, you're not that hip. Jennifer Aniston has a character that she plays, a waitress in an Applebee's, O'Charlie's, what's the other one, the Chili's type place, right? And the waitresses dress up wearing little pins of some kind on banners that they hang about themselves. It's called flair. Yeah, so you've seen the movie, you know that. And her manager is criticizing her because she's not wearing enough flair. And she says, but I read the directions. It said I needed to have 17 pieces of flair. I've counted. I have 17. And he says, but you need more than that. Well, how many more? Do I need 22? And he tries to explain. He's looking for the spirit of you know, the bubbly and outgoing and all kind of things and all that, right? Hiding in this in a weird kind of way. Who's my neighbor? What's that question sound like? Do I have to love that one? How about if I just love these? think that's there. And what does Jesus do? He tells a story. What's the story? The Good Samaritan. Okay? Now, without getting too far into it, because otherwise we will run out of time, the Samaritans, that was a pretty interesting choice to make as the hero of this thing. Because the Samaritans were the one group this guy would like to say, okay, those at least are not my neighbors, right? Except Jesus turns the table and has the Samaritans loving Jewish people and showing love to them. And at the end of that passage, at the end of the story of the Good Samaritan, what does Jesus say? Verse 36, which of these three do you think proved himself a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of bandits? And the man who was anxious to justify himself replied, the one who showed pity toward him. He wasn't able to say the Samaritan. He said, the one who showed pity. And Jesus says, go and do the same yourself. What does it mean? What does it mean to go and do those things? And you'll have life. That was what we saw early. What does it mean to go and do likewise? What does that mean? To go and do likewise? Guess what? You don't get to answer that one either. But we now flagged the three big questions that we're going to deal with. Let me now try to see if I can say these questions in a way that communicates. What's the law? That's the place where all the commandments are. Okay? What's the prophets? That's almost everything else in the Old Testament. So when he says the law and the prophets, what's he talking about? He's talking about the Bible as it existed in those days. What's the purpose of the Bible? If you think about that, it may come out this way. All that the Bible is trying to tell you about being in right relationship with God hangs on these two commandments. Everything that God is trying to say through His Word and through His prophets and through His law is summed up, derived from these two. When I teach my classes in chemistry, I tell them they have a challenging job. If they take a foreign language course, they're probably going to have to learn 2,000 words. But at least every word they learn, they probably already know what the word means. They just have to learn a new name for it. That won't be true in some of the tonal languages and some of the East Asian languages, but most of the European languages, that would be true. In chemistry, they have to learn 2,000 more terms and they don't know what they mean. That's a harder course. So what do? They can either try to memorize their way through it, or they can learn certain things from which all the other things they might need to know derive. There's three laws of thermodynamics. If you can understand those, lots of stuff snaps into focus. There's a few principles of kinetics. If you understand those, lots of things snap into focus. There's principles here. If you can learn those. Jesus says, if you can learn these two things and put them into practice, everything else that you need will snap into place. I've got a better way of saying that. Let me find it. Okay. Number two. What does it mean that doing that, obeying those, keeping track of those, is better than burnt offerings and sacrifices? What does that mean? And then thirdly, what does it mean to go and do likewise? Those are our questions. Now, I need to try to see if I can put this in context where we can get started understanding it. Last week, if you were here, we talked about coveting. That was the last of the Ten Commandments. Some of you were here. I saw you here. What did Lon Solomon, I told you I stole some of this stuff from Lon Solomon, what did he have to say about that commandment, about that sin that was different from all the others? Yeah.
The other two sins of action. God, action is
eternal. Uh-huh.
Attitude.
That's right. But he went somewhere with that thought.
The other commands start with that. Yeah.
This is a mother sin.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a one, you stumble here and you're going to be falling into all these other things. Right? Okay. Just as coveting is a mother sin, these two commandments put together represent the exact and precise opposite. Obeying and doing these things, loving God and loving other people the way God does, gives rise to patterns of attitude, action, and accomplishment that line up with everything Scripture is calling us towards. It is the very antithesis, the perfect opposite of coveting. No action, attitude, or accomplishment is worth much that is not rooted in love, nourished in love, and brought to effect in love. 1 Corinthians 13 follows 1 Corinthians 12. Lots of people know 13. Few people know the context in which it sits. 1 Corinthians 12 talks about spiritual gifts. And then it says, if you do not exercise those spiritual gifts in the context of love, you might as well just be banging on a bucket. Going through the motions is worth little if the heart is not acting out of love. So, what's the recipe? I don't know what recipe you would come up with if you had a chance to think about this. I have one to offer you. I invite you to ponder it and then adjust it to where it fits with where you are. But I've got a list. And here's the first piece. And when I do this, I'm not talking about one of these. I'm beginning the process of sort of talking about all of them at once. Number one. Be aware. There are signals that people send that say they're in trouble. There are signals people send that say, I'm tired, I need to be alone. Miss those signals, and you may not be doing what you need to do. Be aware. If somebody is in trouble, it is a good thing to notice. It is a good thing to respond. But how you respond needs to be informed as well. It begins with being aware, picking up on the signals that people send. There are some people who are better than that than others. There are some people like Norman who can teach us something of how to do those things. And this was the point when I pointed to you and said, you don't become a chaplain unless somebody's tried to teach you what some of this signal reading stuff is. Because that's a good front of it. Here's number two.
Being aware of their signals, but it's also being aware of what's going on inside of you.
What your own motive.
That's what my 2 years at MCB was a lot of what that was about. What's going on inside of me? What is triggered in me because of what you're going through, therefore causing me to react in a certain way? We don't like to do that.
Awareness is driving in both directions, and that's a good way to say it. Be accessible.
She talked about it as well.
Did she not? Yeah. Be accessible. Don't be so closed in that you put up barriers that people can't cross. The third one, which may sound like the same thing, in my mind and maybe only in my mind, it's different. Be interruptible. Be interruptible. If you ever get so busy that you can't stop to help, maybe you're too busy. And I'm feeling particular guilt on this one because of something that happened on Friday. For the last 3 years, something has been going on in my classes that I've not seen before, and I mean just about ever. I have 1, 2, 3 students in an hour who get up and leave my room for 4 or 5 minutes. I don't know how they can learn what I'm trying to teach them when they leave in the middle of it and they don't see the connections. But they do. So when kids get up and leave, I'm to the point now where I'm not as bothered by it as I was 2 years ago, 3 years ago when this pattern started. But Friday, I'm halfway through my lecture, one of these students who has left the room comes back to the door. A colleague is behind her, and I realize she's looking shaky. And the colleague says, I found her walking around outside. I think she's about to faint. And it was clear he was ready to walk away. I'm teaching a class. I know his schedule. He's clear. A student volunteered. I owe that student a lot. got up, went with her, took her to the student health to get her looked at. I probably should have stopped the class, but I'd already taught the first hour. This was the second hour. I get them out of sync. I don't know. Did I do the right thing? I'm ready to blame him because he wasn't busy and I was, but I don't think that's fair. But the idea of being accessible and being interruptible, there comes a point where sometimes something's more important than what you'd planned to do. Which leads me back to the little story that we last were on, the one that brought us to that third question. Here's the Samaritan, right? But the focus of the story doesn't start out on the Samaritan. Who does it start out on? Some guy's been beaten and robbed, and he's left half dead by the side of the road. Who's the first person to come along? I'll give you a break. Who are the first two? Because I don't know if I can get the order either.
A priest
and a Levite. Okay, a religious leader and a person in religious service. And what did each of them do? Walked by on the other side. Okay, aware, okay. Accessible, interruptible, no. Okay, third guy to come along is the Samaritan, and the Samaritan responds. He's the only one that had a reason to do that by the way the Jews have been treating Samaritans. But he didn't. And the whole story hangs on that. Now, unfortunately, unfortunately, I need now to be inspired by a Hollywood television show. And I apologize for that. The show was West Wing, and it ran for a while, and they had this one episode. If you've been in here regularly, you've heard me talk about this before. There was a character on there, I forget his name, Josh, I think, and there was something wrong with him that he was bottling all kinds of stuff up inside him, and he wasn't getting his job done, and it was killing him and all this, and some people had noticed, and they had demanded that he meet with a trained counselor that they had flown in from somewhere to meet with him. And during this marathon, 3, 4, 5 hour session, in which he finally breaks through the things that have all this bottled up inside of him, he says at one point before the breakthrough, he says, "You know, I don't think you're allowed to be an assistant to the president and have this problem." He's fearful for his job. He's fearful for losing all the things he's worked all his life to accomplish. He's fearful of losing the chance to be with the people that he cares about because the workplace is a good place for him. The counselor finally gets him through all of this stuff, and he breaks out, and it's all coming out, and he's beginning to share it. Those of you who know the story, do you remember what the counselor did at that moment? He closed his attaché case. He said, "We're through," and he leaves. And the guy's walking by. Wait! I'm ready to talk. It's just the guy says, "Look, you got all these people around you. You got plenty of people around you who can help you now." It was getting to the point where you could begin to access that help, to respond to that help, to take advantage of that help. That's what I need to do. I've done that. You don't need me anymore. But the story doesn't end there. He comes out of his office. I think there's a clock on the wall. I think it was 2 a.m. by the clock on the wall. This is all just fictional characters, right? Clock on the wall says 2 a.m. He comes walking out through the main lobby of the White House, and he finds Leo McGarry, the chief of staff, who had demanded that he have this session. He finds McGarry sitting in the chair. And he looks up and he says, "What are you doing here?" He says, "I'm waiting on you." "What are you waiting on me for?" And he says, "Let me tell you a story. There was a guy walking home one night, and they'd been doing road repairs, and there was a deep hole in the road, and it was dark, and he didn't see it, and he fell in and hurt himself. And a doctor came walking by." Sorry. And he looks up and he says, Doc, can you help me?" And the doctor says, "Sure," pulls out a prescription pad, writes out a prescription, throws it in the hole, and says, "Have this filled, you'll be fine." And goes on. Preacher comes by. "Preacher, can you help me?" "Sure I can." Pulls out a pad of paper, writes out a prayer, says, "Here, pray this, it'll help." And he walks on. He's sitting there, hurt, alone. And he sees his friend go by. Joe, I'm down here in the hole. Can you help me?" "Sorry, Joe." "Maybe not. Maybe I'm not sorry. Joe, can you help me?" And Joe jumps in the hole. "What are you doing, Joe? Now there's two of us down here." Joe says, "Yeah, but I've been in a hole a lot like this one, and I think I know the way out." Be aware, be accessible, be interruptible, because maybe the fact that you're in a hole now and somebody helps you get out. Leo McGarry's comment was, I've been in the hole you're in, and Josh didn't know that. I've got two more.
I'm going to put a circle around these because this is where it gets important.
Be wise in how you help. And you're not going to get that wisdom out of your own skull. And you're not going to get that wisdom out of your own heart. This is where you're going to need to have some help from the Lord. This is where bathing what you do in prayer, getting guidance from people around you who perhaps know a little bit more. God's wisdom has to be part of this, or it's not going to work. Try to do it on your own. It may work for a while, but it's going to be in trouble. Try to do it God's way, with God's active involvement, with the Spirit's involvement. Much better chance things are going to work properly.
Wisdom does not always mean using words.
And wisdom absolutely does not. When Job's friends came from far away to be with him, we always hear them criticize. What was the first thing they did? They sat in silence for 7 days. Best thing they could have done.
Don't discount presence.
Why? Presence, not words. If you're going to speak, speak little and listen lots. But presence. And it's not the presence of 100 of us. It's maybe the presence. But all this, I think, is fitting together. Number five. Follow up. Whatever's happening this week, where the crisis comes to a head, where the situation finally just comes to where it looks like, okay, that's it. There's still life beyond that. And follow-up is tough. You get your own list, but that's mine for this morning. If you want to know how to love each other, it starts with some variation on these five. Lots of other things could and should be said, but maybe this will catalyze us to think about those. There's more we're going to do. We'll come back next time, and we'll talk about some of that. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, we thank you for the time we have. We thank you for your Scripture. We especially thank you for your Son. Your love for us through Jesus enables us to love each other. And together, as we love each other through your Spirit, maybe others, our neighbors, can begin to catch a glimpse. We realize if we think about it, your love for us causes our love for you. Your love for us causes our love for each other. And then finally, out of that flows the love to the neighbor. The neighbor is the one in the middle, because it's catching the spill from each end. Help us do these things. For everything that we want in relationship with you hangs in the balance. For we ask in Jesus' name.